Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Hello to you, the listener. Thanks for tuning in and listening. I'm Gail Seiler, your host for today. Today is Martin Luther King Day. If you were listening prior to Local Talk, the previous show aired an interview with Yolanda King, Martin Luther King's daughter, and we'll be continuing talking about Martin Luther King later in the show. We'll also be focusing on the start of the Iowa legislature, which opened this past week. But first, it's Monday, so let's look at the weather for the week. Despite a bit of warming and melting last week, we fell back into a cold weather pattern over the weekend. Last night, there were a few inches of snow, and there was some blowing and drifting overnight, and we still have wind chill warning across much of the state. Today, it will remain cold with a high of 0 degrees. That's right, a high of 0 degrees, still chilly. And those low temps, near and below zero, will continue into Tuesday. But then on Wednesday, it will begin to get warmer, going up to the low 20s, with highs above freezing starting on Wednesday and running right into the weekend. It will even reach the 40s on Friday and Saturday, so they say. However, the long-range forecast calls for light snow on Sunday. But overall, today and Tuesday, we'll see frigid temperatures, and that will be the coldest of the coming week. And there is no snow forecast until next Sunday. If you know someone who has trouble keeping their motor vehicle up to code, tell them about the Brake Light Clinic being held today, January 15th, from 11 until 3, at 500 Wallace in the east parking lot of ISU. You can have your brake light repaired or replaced for free. The event is sponsored by the Heartland of Iowa Democratic Socialists. The idea behind it is to prevent unnecessary police stops, which can lead to involvement with the justice system. And because the weather today is predicted to be very cold, they'll sponsor a similar event in the spring. So look out for that date. For more information, you can contact them at heartofiowadsa@gmail.com. So the Brake Light Clinic, where you can get a brake light repaired or replaced for free, is today at 500 Wallace in the east parking lot of ISU from 11 till 3. The Iowa State Legislature opened their 2018 season this week, and I met with Drew Camp, the Director of Business Retention and Expansion and Government Relations for the Ames Chamber of Commerce. We talked about the chamber's legislative priorities and what they will be lobbying for this year. We spoke on Tuesday, which was the day after the legislative session opened, and the day of the governor's condition of the state address, which Drew attended earlier that day. I began by asking him about the broad legislative priorities that the Ames Chamber of Commerce is lobbying for this session.
The biggest things that we're kind of looking at going into the session, really, I'll kind of just touch on some of the big issues. The first thing's really going to be the budget, because the first thing they're going to need to do is go in and decide how to deappropriate about $37 million from the current FY18 fiscal year.
And but deappropriate basically means cut.
Yes. A fancy word for cut. Yes.
Reduce spending.
Yeah. Once that's done, the things that we really do want to look at, the biggest thing is really tax relief and modernization. We want to see it at both the corporate and the individual level. We want it simplified. We want it more streamlined. We want to create more certainty in the program, similar to what we saw at the federal level, with the certainty that was created with the recent Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that was passed in December and signed into law in December. And one thing we did hear that was a surprise to a lot of people actually down at the condition of the state this morning is that Governor Reynolds and her administration are proposing to only take on individual income tax reform this year. That doesn't mean that's what's going to happen. Obviously, the legislature can take a path that they want to. But she said to take up individual tax reform this year, take up corporate tax reform next year, and in the meantime, create a bipartisan task force that's able to look at the tax credits that economic development organizations and businesses utilize when they're expanding or retaining their positions or they're being attracted to the state from out of state.
Last session, there was not much bipartisan work on most issues. Is there a hope that there will be more bipartisanship this year?
There is, and I think that was really the kind of the sentiment when she proposed the creation of that task force, is really to kind of bring both sides together. We don't know what the composition looks like, but we assume that it would be diverse.
So tax modernization or simplification is something that your group will be lobbying for?
That is correct, yes. Us and, like I said, the other 16 members of the Iowa Chamber Alliance, Iowa Association of Business and Industry, Professional Developers of Iowa, we're all kind of on board together in a uniform approach to wanting to make sure that we can streamline and simplify the tax code.
And often when we talk about economic development in general, there's a real focus on growth. In what I've heard so far of the legislative session, a lot of the Republicans, which are in control of the House and the Senate, talk about really stimulating Iowa economic growth. And whenever I hear that, I wonder, why is growth always a good thing? And is growth always a good thing? And what are the trade-offs? Are there trade-offs?
There are. It can be a positive. It can be a negative. When we talk about economic growth, obviously we see that as a positive because that's going to be reinvestment going back into the local communities through payroll taxes, whatever it may be, sales taxes. You make purchases on expansions, property taxes, increased property taxes if you add on to facilities, things along those lines as we see economic growth and just the overall broadening of the tax base and then creation of jobs, which then therefore obviously creates those payroll taxes and money to go back into the system through sales taxes and things of the sort. So when we hear economic growth, we definitely see it as a positive thing. One thing that we do have to be careful of, though, is when you look at revenue neutrality, you know, trying to do things in a revenue neutral manner, which means that it doesn't have a net positive or negative to the state economy or to the state budget, is something that sometimes economic growth is used as an approach or a stance that you can make something revenue neutral by projected economic growth. And I think a lot of people are starting to realize that's something that needs to have some hesitation around it, just because it's hard to determine, well, what's growth going to be. So that's going to be one thing, too, that really needs to be looked at. But we do believe when you create a better business environment by simplifying and streamlining tax codes, for example, it does set up a better environment for potential economic growth. But it's really hard to determine and project what that actually is going to be.
So maybe we can talk about other factors in terms of retaining and promoting a workforce. Are there particular issues around those topics that you'll be pushing for this session?
There are. To start, the Future Ready Iowa initiative is really one that the Ames Chamber and many other chambers in the Iowa Chamber Alliance as well, the 16 largest chambers, once again, will really be behind. It's something that we think we really need to be looking at to push our state forward as far as workforce development and training goes. There's going to be so many. There's already a very large skills gap, and there's going to only be more and more retirements in fields such as building trades, advanced manufacturing, health sciences is another one that's a really big one, and there's a big gap in. And we're working to address those, but we also need some legislative fixes to address that as well, and we think this is a good first step. But an important piece is to really not only make sure you're putting the policy forward that has been written up by the Future Ready Iowa Initiative, but making sure that while you're doing that, you're working with the likes of the community colleges throughout the state, in our case, DMAC. You're working with higher education institutions like Iowa State University. You're working with the K-12 systems to really make sure that it all is going to work for them, and you're not going to create a bill that, when it's all said and done, is a little bit tough for them to implement.
In many ways, it sounds like your priorities are kind of aligned with the Republican priorities. So it seems, in terms of the business perspective, the tax perspective, it seems to be aligned with them. And yet you also seem to be talking about promoting education, both K-12 and higher ed, and some other issues that maybe are things that have not been Republican agenda items in the positive sense, at least in the last session. Funding for education was cut, and there's lots of talk that that will go further this time. So how are you going to lobby some kind of balance?
One of the biggest things we really pride ourselves on is the fact that we do remain balanced. We do remain bipartisan and nonpartisan in everything we do when it comes to the lobbying piece. We will be pushing, obviously, the tax reform and relief modernization. That's going to be our top priority. But also, we understand that Ames is very much a public institution community. A lot of public employees, not only with Iowa State University, but also obviously with the Department of Transportation, the school district, the county, and then also Mary Greeley Medical Center. There are a lot of public employees here. So that's one of the things we really try to keep in mind when we lobby as well. And K-12 was able to receive a 1.1% increase last year. Higher education was not so lucky. Iowa State got about an $11.5 million cut last year. And there seems to be possibly more on the horizon. But that's something we are concerned about and I have voiced with the legislators. So one of the best parts about doing what I do is just the fact that we get to have our hands in so many different things. And we can really be working on, you know, obviously what may be considered one side of the aisle or another as an issue, but we just see it as common sense.
And I saw in some of the materials I was looking at of your legislative priorities that one of the areas was transportation, infrastructure, and communication. And under there was mentioned water quality, kind of quality of life areas, really. Those require funding. What will you be pushing for in those areas in particular?
One of the interesting things the governor said today in her condition of the state address is that the first bill she wants to sign into law this session is a water quality bill. And that's something that became somewhat of a contentious issue last year when the Senate had the bill the House had passed back in 2016. The House had put a bill forward that we as a chamber and then the Chamber Alliance felt was a much better bill. But there's both of those are sitting there. And we don't know what a bill will look like. That's something we're going to monitor because it's a huge issue to municipalities. They say last numbers I heard, they might have gone up over the last year or so, but it was about a $1.5 to $1.2 billion municipal issue throughout the state. And then overall as an issue, they say the water quality issue is between $4 and $6 billion. So it's something that's hugely impactful. And the ag community is aware of it. The cities are aware of it. Everyone's aware of it. It's just a matter of them getting to the table and agreeing on something. And that brings me back to the House bill that we talked about that we like better than the Senate bill. The reason we like that better is it's a watershed approach. They bring together, I don't recall how many watersheds there are in the state off the top of my head, but you look at, like I said, an approach from a watershed, and as I talk to people who are experts in this field, they say that's the way it should be done because you get a more comprehensive look. Another piece that the House bill has is it also has grant funding up front to kind of help with some of the upfront costs because these are multi-million dollar projects a lot of the time, these wastewater, water projects that we're talking about. That's very important for municipal utilities such as Ames Water and Wastewater Department. But then also it includes business. That's something that a lot of people may not know. The Nutrient Reduction Strategy, which is a partnership between the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship, Iowa Department of Natural Resources, and then our own Iowa State University, has been looking at this issue for a number of years. And in that, not only is the municipalities, the ag community, it's also 105 or so of the largest corporate polluters or people who put out effluent are also part of that. And we think that's important that they're involved in any piece of water quality as well because they're having an impact on it as well, and they're already tied into the nutrient reduction strategy. So it makes sense to keep things tied to that strategy. Another proposal or another idea that's been floated too is the funding of the Iowa Water and Land Legacy, the Natural Resource and Outdoor Recreation Trust Fund, which passed, I believe, in 2010, but it would have to be funded by a 3/8 sales tax increase.
But I think I've heard that there have been public opinion surveys about whether people are willing to pay that sales tax increase to support clean water, and that the majority of Iowans actually say they are.
That has been reported, yes.
Yeah. And what about broadband access? What will you be lobbying for there?
A couple years ago, I believe it was the 2015 or 16 session, we were able to get the Connect Every Acre initiative passed. And what that was really to target broadband expansion into especially rural communities in the state. But we really know that there's a lot of dead spots, per se, throughout the state. So really trying to make sure some funding is put out there to fund the Connect Every Acre grant initiative that was originally passed but was never funded. But one thing the governor also mentioned in her condition of the state address today is Lieutenant Governor Gregg will be chairing up a commission on how can we look at redevelopment and investment in rural communities? But part of that also that she mentioned was, you know, expansion of broadband because that can be a huge thing as well and set people apart.
Are there lessons to be learned from neighboring states? I know several states, Kansas and Wisconsin in particular, have really cut taxes in recent years, but that led to unfortunate cuts in services. Is there a concern with that in the idea of tax reform and tax cut?
that's one of the things that we'll be having to watch is, you know, our stance is that it should be revenue neutral, because if you're going to do something like that, it's good policy to make sure it can be paid for and not necessarily based on, like I said earlier, economic growth, something that is a for sure sustainable source that's predictable. So those are things that we're really going to have to look at as you look at the revenue neutrality of the tax bill. And that's something that I have long been adamant about, that that's what it should be, just because that's good policy and it avoids potential windfalls later.
That was Drew Camp from the Ames Chamber of Commerce speaking about the legislative priorities for the chamber during this legislative session. This evening, the annual Martin Luther King celebration will take place at Ames Middle School. Birthday cake to honor Dr. King's birthday will be served starting at 5:30, and the program will begin at 6:30. At the annual celebration, this year's Ames Humanitarian Award will be given to Heather Withers. Ms. Withers is originally from England and has lived in Canada as well. She came to Ames 19 years ago. When I interviewed her earlier in the week, we began by talking about the activities she became involved in related to equity and inclusion since she arrived in Ames.
When I first came, I worked for a year with Good Neighbor, and Good Neighbor Emergency Assistance deals with rent and utilities, healthy food vouchers, and now gas vouchers for people who are just needing that hand up at the time that the uplift of getting some help with their rent or utilities. And that was very fulfilling. There were some really wonderful people came in who were just going paycheck to paycheck, and this made a lot of difference in their lives. I have also worked with Beyond Welfare for quite a time, and that was bringing together people who, women generally, but men also, single women very often, who were looking to have a sustainable income and to move ahead. And so it involved doing things like job training, resumes, getting transportation, car for transportation, a lot of advocacy work, a lot of self-empowerment work. And it was a group of people who some of them were university professors and just regular people in town, people who were homeless or people who were in near poverty. And that became a very real community of people. And they had the idea that everyone needs enough money, friends, and meaning in their lives. And community that works, that is still in existence, has morphed out of the Beyond Welfare and is very much a community of people coming together for mutual support and help. I have also worked on the Amos Housing team and have been really excited to see how that has, over the years, has just enlarged from a few people who would go to city council meetings to talk about affordable housing to a group of people coming together that helped to form the Story County Housing Trust. And that was bringing together people of all different backgrounds, from real estate developers, people in the university, architects, people who would benefit from affordable housing, housing department of the city, concerned citizens. And it's a wonderful when people come together and work in that way to benefit the whole. And that's what I love to see, when you cross-cut all kinds of groups in the community and bring them into a unity and then have wonderful things. The Housing Trust came out of that, which allows the city to apply for a lot more funds than they could for affordable housing. I have worked some with the LGBTQ community, spoken at the university, been to some of their events, and being a minister from a denomination that has always been open to same-sex marriage and same-sex relationships, I was able to do commitment ceremonies before there was the law was passed to allow same-sex marriages. Yeah. And then, of course, I've done same-sex marriages since then. And that was always very gratifying. Another area that brings together many people is interfaith activities.
And you've worked with refugees as well, is that right?
That is the latest one, yes. The Ames Interfaith Refugee Alliance, known as ERA, has been going now just over a year and a half, bringing together mainly faith communities but other groups who were interested in Ames being a welcoming community for all people, including refugees. And so we have so far only had one family, but the goal is to get more families, help them to settle and feel at home in this community.
What would you say has been one of these efforts that you think has had the biggest impact?
Well, I do think that the getting affordable housing here affects so many people. So I think that's definitely one that I would say.
And that's something that you were involved in. It's kind of the beginnings of, and it's been sustained.
Yes. I was more in the earlier days of that, and then other people came in, and it's really exciting to see what they're doing. So that has an impact. Beyond Welfare, I believe, had an impact too, a great impact, not only in helping people, as I said, mainly women, to advance, but in terms of self-esteem and being able to advocate. Each year they would go down to the legislature, and a group of women who had not done much public speaking before were in very confidently speaking with legislators. And sometimes when other things were being cut from the budget, some of the efforts around child care were not cut. So that was good to see people being empowered and able to do things.
And being heard.
I'm being heard, yes.
And from a personal perspective, what would you say is one of these that has been the most personally rewarding?
Oh, all of them. But I love being in areas that are not always the most popular areas, but that I think bring a lot of hope to people. So I would say the work with LGBTQ, even though I haven't been heavily involved in that, but doing the ceremonies, which are meaningful to the people and very meaningful to me, would be one of them. All of them in different ways because all of them have involved working with people, which I love. Each one of them has had an impact in a different way.
In a different way.
Yeah.
And where do you think this passion for this kind of work comes from in terms of your own commitment to it? Have you ever thought about that, why you do this work?
Well, I love people. But I was saying to someone the other day that when I was a teenager, a lot of people in my life I was very, very close to and cared about a lot died. My mother died when I was 14. And I can remember the night my mother had been in hospital for 6 months and the night when she had died, feeling so lonely. And I mean, there were wonderful people around, but just feeling really lonely. And I think that impacted me more than, you know, I realized in terms of wanting to connect with, be with, in any way, encourage people who are going through times of pain or suffering or loss or self-esteem issues or whatever it might be.
And in this work, have there been failures or work that maybe didn't result in the kind of change, positive change that you hoped it would?
Well, I suppose in any effort you do, whether you're doing it one-on-one or doing it in a group, there are going to be failures. Perhaps some people, some situations don't turn out as you thought they would. But sometimes our perspective is a short-term perspective. And if it hasn't worked out the way we thought in the time frame that we thought, then we think it's not a success. Sometimes things take time, and it could be that there has been an impact with the individual, with the situation that you don't find out about till a lot later. But definitely, yes, you're going to have things that don't work out exactly as you thought. And, of course, it's not really what you think that matters. It's what matters to the individuals that you're interacting with.
You're obviously a leader in the community in being involved in these kinds of efforts. What's your philosophy about getting other people involved and keeping other people engaged in the work?
Well, For me, it is finding what people love to do, of people finding out what their passion is, what they would delight in doing, where they can serve, and just being the encourager, the supporter, the listening ear to what people want to do.
Related to this work that you do around equity and inclusivity, what do you think are the biggest issues facing our community here in Ames?
Well, all of the things around income sustainability, I think, are still issues. There are many of us that don't experience it firsthand, and so there's a tendency to think it doesn't exist. But there's still food insecurity here. There's still people who have incomes that are not even at the sustainable level here. We may have, or I'm sure some people would say definitely do have, some racial, you know, ethnic issues. I do think there's still more work to be done there. Perhaps at times just a general feeling that we're okay in Ames. You know, we're given number one for so many things. So everything's cool in Ames. And not knowing or not recognizing that we do have problems in many areas. They're not as predominant as they are in other larger cities. Mm-hmm. And Ames, I think, is a very good community. But there's always room to improve in our relations with each other. And
so it's easy to become complacent in Ames and think that everything's fine.
Yes, yeah. One example I had of this was, it was a group that was visioning for the future of Ames. And there were about half a dozen of us in the group, and we were talking about Ames. And the people who were, I don't want to stereotype here, but they were white middle-class people, and every person said, oh, Ames is so wonderfully welcoming. You know, I've been in my neighborhood all these years, and we know each other, and we do things together, and it's fabulous. And there were only two people who were of different backgrounds, one from Asia, one Hispanic person, and their experiences were quite different. And if all we had heard were the first people that spoke up, you would have got the impression that Ames is just this wonderful, we don't have any problems, things are fine. Mm-hmm. And the woman had felt that her little girl had been kind of harassed at school, and it was a different picture they were painting that exists alongside of all the wonderful things that we have here.
Really brings up the need to hear the voices beyond those that are the most vocal,
yes,
or that we normally hear.
Yes, yes. And that's why I think organizations like Beyond Welfare are important, because you do surveys with people, and, you know, the people who respond are often the people in the class that's doing okay. And it's so important to hear the voices of people that are struggling sometimes just to do day-to-day living.
Maybe hearing this will inspire more of us to get involved in community work. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate you interviewing me today. It's just been a delight.
That was Heather Withers, who will be honored for her humanitarian work tonight at the annual Martin Luther King celebration at Ames Middle School. Other events taking place in honor of Dr. King will continue over the next week at ISU. The Martin Luther King Jr. Legacy Convocation will be held on Thursday, January 18th at 6 p.m. in the Memorial Union Sunroom. That will be a discussion about balancing First Amendment rights with the concerns of diverse populations on university campuses. Also, Brian Stevenson, the author of a book called Just Mercy, will speak next Monday night at Memorial Union. Martin Luther King Day is a relatively new federal holiday. The campaign to make it a federal holiday in King's honor actually began soon after his assassination, but it wasn't approved for a number of years, and it took quite a bit of effort before it became a federal holiday. The bill establishing MLK Day first came to a vote in the House of Representatives in 1979. That was more than 10 years after he was killed. However, it fell 5 votes short of the number needed for passage. After that, there was an extensive campaign to gain support for the holiday. One thing that played a big role in that campaign was a song written and performed by Stevie Wonder called Happy Birthday. That was the song that Stevie Wonder wrote and recorded to garner support for Martin Luther King's holiday. One verse in that song says, "I just never understood how a man who dies for good could not have a day that would be set aside for his recognition." Sounds a lot better when Stevie sings it. But that song helped the cause, along with a petition of 6 million signatures. With all that support, the bill establishing the holiday finally became law in 1983. Ursula Rudenberg, KHOI station manager, has firsthand experience with the time when MLK Day officially became a holiday and was announced as such.
Stevie Wonder gave a concert at Radio City Music Hall on the night that he announced that this holiday had been made official. I was a fan of Stevie Wonder, and I had a ticket to that concert that night at Radio City Music Hall. This was in New York City, and it was a great concert. And at the end of the concert, Stevie Wonder, you know, put down his instruments. He walked to the front of the stage, and he announced that this holiday had been made official. And I think he was actually crying when he said it. It was a very emotional moment for everybody in the audience. And then he played that Happy Birthday song. And he, I don't remember exactly the logistics of it, but I remember that he came off of the stage. He must have had somebody with him because Stevie Wonder's blind. But he came down from the stage and he walked through the audience, and the whole audience formed a conga line after him singing the song. And they sang it all the way out of the theater. And I remember it because the theater has these magnificent kind of old school staircases that go from the second floor to the first floor, I think on two sides, kind of like how you see in the movies, you know. And so people divided themselves up between these two staircases, and they all came down these staircases singing this song in unison with Stevie Wonder in the lead. And it was just the most joyous, amazing moment.
And it was just spontaneous. People just kind of followed along. And
it was spontaneous. It probably was partially planned by Stevie. Actually, before he started singing, he gave a brief history about how he had worked to make this a holiday and what it meant to him. It was a very beautiful speech. And then I don't know if his decision to walk through the audience singing was spontaneous or not.
But the audience just
It was the most
responded.
Amazing moment. It was the most amazing moment. And it was actually, to be honest, one of the first few times that I'd actually heard the song. I wasn't that aware of the song before then. And it's a very beautiful song.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very, very, just a very uplifting moment. And it was interesting, earlier in the concert, Stevie Wonder played the song Ebony and Ivory, which is about racial relations. Harmony between the races. And somebody in the audience didn't like that and yelled out, "We're from the Bronx," kind of as a protest to him talking about racial harmony. And it was really interesting, you know, because Stevie Wonder had this very kind of conciliatory, open-hearted position or attitude. But when somebody yelled that, he stopped in his tracks and he turned around. And he completely transformed the way he looked, and he looked back and he said, "Oh yeah, well, I'm from Detroit." And when he said that, he really scared. The way he said it was like 10 times scarier than the person who said they were from the Bronx.
Wow.
So he really threw down right away. He was ready. You know, he made it clear that he knew exactly what he was doing, and this was not coming from some idealistic place, that, you know, he knew racial conflict. So it was very, very interesting night, and it just, you know, made Stevie Wonder unforgettable to me.
And that song.
And that song. It's a beautiful song. And everybody sang it, and then they spilled out onto the sidewalk and, you know, the street of New York, and were singing it, and it kind of spread to the crowd outside, people walking by. And it was just this, you know, this moment of celebration. And it was clearly a moment of tremendous joy and relief for Stevie Wonder. I think that part was very, very spontaneous.
Because
he had really worked
had
for this.
He had been working on making that holiday a reality.
He really worked for that, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very much for sharing that memory with us and that story.
And happy MLK Day.
Same to you. That was Ursula Rudenberg, KHOI station manager. What a place to be at that moment. On April 28th, 1965, Dr. King visited Davenport, Iowa, to accept the Pachem in Terris Peace and Freedom Award from the Diocese of Davenport's Catholic Interracial Council. The ceremony was held at the former Masonic Temple in Davenport.
The Davenport, Iowa Catholic Interracial Council, believing that human society is realized in freedom, that is to say, that all men are equal by reason of their natural dignity, that racial discrimination can in no way be justified, does hereby confer upon the Reverend Martin Luther King, Jr., this Possum in Terris Peace and Freedom Award in recognition of the momentous contribution he has made and is making, especially through his nonviolent protest movement, toward reawakening the conscience of the nation to what still remains for the completion of democracy in America as regards both to peace and freedom. Given at Davenport, Iowa, on the 28th day of April, 1965, Dr. King.
I need not pause to say how very delighted and honored I am to be here tonight and to be a part of this auspicious occasion. And I certainly want to express my deep and sincere gratitude to the Catholic Interracial Council of this community for bestowing upon me such a great honor. And I can assure you that this award is of inestimable value for the continuance of my humble efforts. I want to join tonight with my fellow recipients of awards by saying that I consider this far more than an honor to me personally. I think in a real sense that in presenting this award, you honor the hundreds and thousands, yea, even millions of people who are engaged in this mighty struggle for freedom and human dignity in this country. Many of them you don't know. They are those anonymous, faceless individuals who are working tirelessly and unrelentingly to make the American dream a reality. And I'd accept this award for those people, for those heroes who will never have their names in Who's Who, and who may never be mentioned in the newspapers, but they are the real heroes of our struggle. I think of many other things tonight, but I'd like to mention at least one that I think of in receiving this award. Many things have happened over the last few years to make our world a better world. But I think probably the most, certainly one of the most significant developments in the church community and Christendom, I should say, is the fact that the Christian family has been brought closer together. And this is to the eternal credit of the great Pope John, who with a magnificent ecumenical spirit brought new levels of understanding between all Christians. And I can say in a rather humorous vein that when a Catholic group can give an award to a fellow by the name of Martin Luther, things are getting better. But in all sincerity, I think these developments are developments that we are all happy about. I think the other thing is that the civil rights movement has given us a great opportunity to allow the ecumenical spirit to really flow forth. And it has been marvelous indeed to see Protestants, Catholics, and Jews working together in demonstrations and in communities all across the country to solve the problem of racial injustice. And I know as a result of this that we are making strides, and we will continue to make strides in the future. I would like to say in receiving this award a few words about the American dream, because this is what we are trying to do, and this is what we are seeking to do in the civil rights struggle. This is what we are seeking to do in all of our efforts to make brotherhood a reality. We're trying to make the American dream a reality. And the substance of this dream is expressed in those sublime words in the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, the first thing we notice in this great dream is an amazing universalism. It does not say some men, it says all men. It does not say all white men, it says all men, which includes black men. It does not say all Gentiles, it says all men, which includes Jews. It does not say all Protestants, it says all men, which includes Catholics. And then that is something else at the very heart of that dream, which is ultimately one of the basic things that distinguishes our form of government from totalitarian regimes. It says in substance that each individual has certain basic rights that are neither conferred by nor derived from the state. In order to discover where they came from, it is necessary to move back behind the dim mist of eternity. They are God-given. And very seldom, if ever, in the history of the world has a socio-political document expressed in such profound, eloquent, and unequivocal language the dignity and worth of human personality. This is a great dream, and it reminds us that every man is an heir of a legacy of dignity and worth. And yet ever since the founding fathers of our nation dreamed this dream, America has been something of a schizophrenic personality, tragically divided against herself. On the one hand, we have proudly professed the noble principles of democracy, and yet on the other hand, we have sadly practiced the very opposite of those principles. Indeed, slavery and racial segregation have been strange paradoxes in a nation founded on the principle that all men are created equal. But now more than ever before, America is challenged to realize this dream. For the shape of the world today does not permit our nation the luxury of an anemic democracy, and the price that America must pay for the continued oppression of the Negro and other minority groups is the price of its own destruction. For the hour is late, the clock of destiny is ticking out, and we must act now before it is too late. And so I would like to mention tonight some of the things that we as individuals, some of the things that we as Christians, some of the things that we as religious people must do in order to make the American dream a reality. I'd like to start on the world scale by saying that if the American dream is to become a reality, we must have a concern about the larger world dream for peace and brotherhood. And so if we are to make this dream a reality, we must have a world perspective. The world in which we live is geographically one. And the great struggle taking place now is to make this world one in terms of brotherhood. Now, it is true that the geographical oneness of our age has come into being to a large extent as a result of modern man's scientific ingenuity. Modern man, through his scientific genius, has been able to dwarf distance and place time in chains. And our jet planes have compressed into minutes distances that once took days and even months. I think Bob Hope has adequately described this new jet age in which we live, and it isn't a common thing for a Baptist preacher to quote Bob Hope, but I think he's adequately described this jet age in which we live. He said it is an age in which it is possible to take a nonstop flight from Los Angeles, California to New York City, a distance of about 3,000 miles. And if on taking off in Los Angeles you develop hiccups, you will hick in Los Angeles and cup in New York City. You know, through our scientific and technological genius, we have made of this world a neighborhood. And now, through our moral and ethical commitment, we must make of it a brotherhood. We must all learn to live together as brothers, or we will all perish together as fools. This is what we must see now.
That was an excerpt of the speech that Martin Luther King made in Davenport, Iowa, in 1965. As I listened to it, I was struck that he spoke of things that we still struggle with in this country. For example, his idea that we have noble principles, but we practice the opposite of those principles. It seems we are still doing that today. We can only hope that those in our country today who speak with disrespect of African Americans, Latinos, and people from countries in Africa and from Haiti and El Salvador and other places, that these people might heed and be touched by Dr. King's words. To quote Dr. King in the speech you just heard, we must all live together as brothers, or we will perish together as fools. There was quite a bit of resistance to MLK Day, even after it was approved by Congress. Although it was a national holiday, it still had to be designated as a holiday by each state, and that took a while. For example, in 1990, Arizona still had not made it a holiday, and the Super Bowl was supposed to take place in Arizona in 93. The National Football League threatened to move the Super Bowl if the holiday was voted down, and it was voted down. 76% of Arizona voters rejected the King holiday, so the NFL moved the 1993 Super Bowl to Pasadena, California. The holiday was officially observed in all 50 states for the first time in 2000. That's 17 years after the law establishing the holiday was passed. Even today, some states observe it but use alternative names or have combined it with other holidays. For example, in Wyoming, it's called Martin Luther King / Wyoming Equality Day. In a few cases, states have combined Dr. King's name with another historical figure. Rather bizarrely, even with the name of some Confederate generals, for example, Robert E. Lee, in Virginia, Alabama, and Arkansas. MLK Day was not always a day of service as it is now. The King Holiday and Service Act was signed into law by President Clinton in 1994. That legislation challenges Americans to make the King holiday into a day of citizen action and volunteer service in honor of Dr. King. They say that Dr. King's favorite song was a gospel song titled, If I Can Help Somebody Along the Way. He believed that the real path to greatness is through service. Shortly before he was killed, Dr. King spoke about how he wanted to be remembered when he was gone. He said that he didn't want people to talk about the Nobel Peace Prize that he had won, or his honorary degrees, or the hundreds of other awards that he received. Instead, he said, quote, I'd like somebody to mention that Martin Luther King tried to give his life serving each other. That's how he wanted to be remembered. We have a slight correction about the Brake Light Clinic. We have additional information that it will not occur at Brookside Park, but will take place at 500 Wallace in the east parking lot of ISU, and that they will be serving hot cocoa. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Gail Seiler. Thanks to Drew Camp and Heather Withers for their interviews. Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can listen to all of our Local Talk shows, including today's, on our website, khoifm.org. Local Talk was engineered by Cynthia McClure. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. And we also heard Happy Birthday by Stevie Wonder. KHOI's membership drive has recently wrapped up, but we are still looking for your support. It is always a good time to become a member of KHOI. You can go to our website, khoifm.org, and look for the donate button or call 515-292-2878. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show, which means you can be part of our team of volunteer producers and reporters. If you would like to join the team, just contact us at the station. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as audience and supporter is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.